Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing well. I'm getting all ramped up to put my bride in a limo and send her to Alaska for 5 weeks. But other than that, I'm doing fine.
Sometimes she goes off the East Coast to London, and now she's going off the West Coast to Alaska. What is that about?
It's about getting that check every other week. Somebody's got to do it better her than me, right?
Man, she's seeing the world.
She is. No, it's an exciting gig because she's still going to be working with BP. You know, she works with IBM, and the gig is with BP, but how cool is Alaska? I mean, yeah.
I know. I don't know what it's like there. Is it rural? I have no idea.
There's double entendre in that question. How
cool
is Alaska?
I know. I missed it because it just scares me to be in Alaska.
It scares you to be in Alaska. It scares you to be downtown.
No, that doesn't scare me. Alaska scares me. I can't even imagine what it would be like for a month there.
Well, you go catch the salmon and
exactly,
you know, pet the bears.
More scary things. More scary things.
All right. So I guess we can focus more on what's going on here for today.
That anyway is the most important thing.
So on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is time for our Atlanta Workplace Learning Radio Special, something that we do every month thanks to the efforts of ASTD and our buddy Leanne Langford over there at Training Pro. She's always does a fantastic job of coordinating this segment and I think we may have hit the pinnacle, man. We have with us now, with a gentleman with Return on People Development. Please welcome to the show, Mike Woodard. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much. Good morning, guys.
We are delighted to have you. Interesting name for the company, Return on People Development. What compelled you to use that name?
Well, 16 years in corporate learning and development, and it's always been about how can we bring the development of our people to solving business problems. So it's Return on People Development.
And I'm operating under the impression that you feel like maybe some organizations don't do as good a job with that as they should or could.
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah.
So what are they doing wrong, man? What are some of the key points?
Some of the things I think organizations do that they could perhaps do a little differently is it's not learning for the sake of learning. It's first and foremost, especially from the learning leader's perspective, what are the business issues that we're trying to solve for as an organization? Where do we want to go? Number two, where are our people in that journey? Do they have the skills? Do they have the knowledge? Do they have the abilities to help us solve these business issues? And then how are you linking the learning to solving these business issues?
It sounds very simple and straightforward, but execution of like nobody says, no, you're crazy, Mike. That's not right.
Yeah.
Right? This executing. Yeah.
Well, it's not only executing, but it's also a very dear friend of mine once said, go slow to go fast. So rather than jumping when somebody says, oh, we need a program on presentation skills or we need a selling skills module, it's like, whoa, wait a second. Let's just stop for a split second. Let's take a half a step back. Let's talk about this. What's telling you that people need presentation skills or that there's a need for selling skills? What's the issue that we're trying to solve for that's telling you that these skills are the answer? Okay, we've answered that. So how are we going to measure that? So we put out presentations, put our people through presentation skills. They attend selling skills. How are we going to measure this? How do you want to measure? Oh, by the way, you as a leader, you've got a huge role in this. Are you ready to put some skin in the game? And that's a huge one where a lot of the, what do you mean I have to put some skin in the game?
I came up with the idea. You're the one who's supposed to put the skin in the game.
That's exactly it. And it's like, no. I can build the tools. We can build the learning. I need you as leaders at a variety of different levels to coach to your people.
Now, who ought to be asking these questions?
The learning leader needs to ask the questions.
The learning leader, the person who is responsible for coordinating all of the development.
Yeah, yeah.
So why don't they just ask the questions? Are they scared?
Because I bet you they don't have a seat at the table.
Very, very well said, yes.
But no, they're not getting invited to the conversation or they're not figuring out how to invite themselves?
A combination thereof. I come from sales. I spent 13 years in sales and rising up the sales ranks into sales management. So I've always said, I sell learning to leaders. But before I ask them to sign on the dotted line, like I did when I was in sales, you also have a role in this, Mr. Customer, i.e. Mr. Leader, or Miss Leader, you've got a role. And this is what I can do. This is what you need to also do to help, i.e. the biggest thing is be the champion, be the model, be the role model, and coach to your people. Expect different knowledge and behavior levels of your folks.
Now, do you take it to the point of, look, if you can't do that, then I can't help you?
It's not that I can't help you.
Depends on cash flow.
It's not that I can't help you. It just makes the impact of these two huge resources, dollars, but more importantly, time, that much more challenging. Yeah, you can put, as I've said before, you can put butts in seats, or you can put faces in front of screens. Fine. What we're really looking for is different behavior from our folks. But
you're saying different behavior is possible if the leader takes a more active role and not just throws money at something.
Correct.
Well, not only that, I suspect if the leader doesn't come behind it and reinforce and coach, he might untrain them quicker than you can train them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right? Through their bad behaviors, through their old thinking.
Right. Or if they have a manager that they let do things their own way that's incongruent with the new way, that could sabotage the whole effort.
Oh, without a doubt. One of the things that I've tried to do to make it easier for leaders at a variety of different levels is build tools for them. Give them a job aid. Don't ask them to reinvent the wheel. Don't ask them to try and do this in the moment. Give them a very simple tool. Here are the key concepts of the model or models. Flip it over. Here are the questions that you could ask your individuals or your team to keep the learning going, to keep reinforcing the behavior that you're expecting, so that it all links to new business performance.
So you're not asking them, like you spoke initially about having skin in the game, you're not like leaving them untethered where they have to figure this out on their own. You're giving them kind of a simple checklist or a simple system that's fairly easy for them to implement in order to achieve the goal that they want to achieve anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Never ask them to try and change their habits other than leverage this little simple tool.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, by the way, here's how we can integrate it. Here's some ways that you could integrate it into the interaction with your people.
Right.
Now, at Return on Development, on People Development, are you selling the methodology that allows companies to do this with all kinds of content, or you're selling specific content and just as a benefit of working with you, you're doing this other stuff that really makes it work?
It's a combination of both. It's a combination of both. I'm helping learning leaders frame up their learning processes. I was very, very blessed early in my learning journey. I worked for Gillette, PepsiCo, and then Georgia Pacific. And in that process, I learned the steps and processes of putting together great business impactful learning through a company called Corporate University Enterprise. And one of the things that I do is help learning leaders tighten up their processes. The other thing that I do is I help from a leadership and management development perspective. It's one of my passions. I've got a master's degree in it. I'm an adjunct professor. So I do help facilitate leadership development.
Well, what I like about this as a potential customer, as an organization, I can invest in one of your skill development programs, leadership, what have you. This whole process comes for the ride, and now it's content agnostic, right? Now I can go get Lee Cantor's Jim Jammy presentation skills course and run it through that same machine. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. And as a customer of mine, we're going to sit and talk about what should be your expectations when you're going to be looking at a training provider. So I have what's called an external training partner standards document, and it looks at all the pieces that make up business impactful learning. So everything from pre-work to the participant materials to participant job aids, managers coaching tools, measurement and evaluation tools. Do we have any type of a blended solution to this? Are there podcasts? Are there webcasts? What are all the pieces that make the investment that you're asking your organization to give you? What are they? What are all those pieces?
Now, we spent a lot of time talking about kind of frustrations and challenges and hurdles. Is there any information you can share that are maybe successes and you know, kind of wins for organizations that you've seen implement this, like maybe drastic change that you've seen when these kind of things have been implemented? Because I think a lot of people get hung up on the negative and what's negatively impacting their business, but they also like to hear about some things that have happened out there in the marketplace. And you don't have to name names, but yeah. Maybe just share some stories about when a culture was a certain way or they were having certain challenges, you were able to implement some of this learning and then things changed.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I go back to two things. I was asked when I joined one of the companies that I worked for, we need a new hire orientation program. I'd heard that 100 times if I'd heard it once. And this time I stopped myself. This was a few years ago. I stopped myself and I, rather than saying to the leader, what do you want it to look like? I asked a slightly different question. I just said, when do you need it? When does it need to be delivered? And the leader looked at me and goes, I don't know. When do you think you could bring something? And I said, 6 months. Well, prior to this, all the new hire orientations that I've led have all been facilitated. Well, this time I said, we're going to do it very, very differently. And what did we end up doing? We ended up building a new hire orientation program built on a 3D gaming platform so that the new hire, when they started, i.e. day one, could begin their new hire journey. And that's really what we called it. And it wasn't a new hire orientation that was done in a day or done in 2 days. It was specifically designed to take 6 to 9 months. And yes, there were things you needed to know day one and day two and day three, but it was all designed around, we can't teach you everything in 1 day or 1 week. So it's a journey. So from time to time, you're going to be prompted to come back into this 3D world and continue your journey.
But they had enough information to get started doing something.
Absolutely.
And so they just slowly integrated themselves into the system.
Absolutely. And before, at certain mile markers through their journey, we tested their knowledge. Yep. We actually gave them a true-false multiple choice test.
To see if they were really kind of retaining the information.
That's exactly it. And we also encouraged them, oh, by the way, this is open book, open note, open computer. So if you need to go back and look for the answer, please do.
Right.
We want you to be successful.
Right. So you had higher engagement?
Oh, much higher engagement by about 2 to 1.
Wow.
Yes. The other thing that we did was we connected the individual new hire with the manager. Rather than, you know, the manager just sends Skippy or Susie to new hire orientation. In this world, because of the beauty of technology, we linked the manager and the participant from day one. So there were things the participant needed to do, and there were things the manager needed to do.
So kind of encourage, nudge them.
It was just a nudge.
Right.
That gentle nudge.
Well, you touched on measurement a little bit earlier in the conversation. How do you go about measuring the return on your people development? Is it as granular as taking a look at the results that Skippy's achieving over time? Or because that's got to be a tough thing to do in your world.
Well, it can be a little challenging, but it's not insurmountable. Again, if you go slow to go fast. I love the Kirkpatrick 4 levels of evaluation. It's an old, tried and true model for evaluating the impact of adult learning. Level 1, reaction. Did they enjoy the learning experience, whether it was a classroom or online? We just want to get a reaction from you. The content, facilitator, whatever it was. But just we want to get their reaction. Level 2, knowledge. I want to test their knowledge. So do you understand the key concepts from this learning? True, false, multiple choice. You can do a survey. You do all kinds of things. But I want to test their knowledge. please use your materials. It is open book, open note. Third, behavior change. This is where we give a structured assessment to the manager. And this is where, oh yeah, Miss Manager, Mr. Manager, now you have skin in the game. You have invested the time and the energy to send your person to some type of skill development. Like I said, online, in person, doesn't matter. Here's an assessment. Look at the questions that we're asking you. Give us the feedback so that we both know, you and I, that your people are performing at a different level. And then last but not least, level four, the business impact. These instruments, you really talk about early in the design of the learning.
Because you got to have a baseline of where they are? Is that?
Yeah. Okay. What are you trying to measure? And then how will we know that the business really, truly did move to this level?
Well, and couldn't it be you lost $5 million last quarter, and this quarter you only lost $2 million? It doesn't necessarily have to be you made 10, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But the business impact, though, but you got to have that conversation early. If you try to come in late with that, that's going to be a hard road to hoe, isn't it?
And without a doubt. I remember years ago doing a negotiating program with a major customer team. And I asked the leader, I said, how will we know we were successful? We're going to test their knowledge. You know, there's a 40-question true-false. We're going to give you a behavior assessment, but truly, at the end of the day, how will we know?
And get that account, tomorrow's pitch.
Well, he said to me, he said, you know what? He goes, Michael, that's a great question. He goes, thank you for asking it. He said, if slotting fees go down, you get credit. He said, I will give you full credit that this program and this skill development has worked. What did I do? About 4 months later, I shot him a note.
How's slotting fees doing?
I said, you just put the entire X team through this. I said, we said slotting fees was huge. He shoots me back a note. He goes, and he copied his boss, senior vice president of sales, the president. And he said, Michael, so-and-so just saved us $2.2 million on slotting fees.
Sweet.
And it was one sentence. That was it. That was his total reply. And I went, okay, there's the business impact.
Right.
I'd put that email like in a sheet protector. And
I did.
Wear it around my neck on every sales call.
It's time for my review. Have you seen this?
That's exactly what I pulled out when it came time for my review. You can be guaranteed it. About a half a dozen of those come in real handy.
Technology, what kind of role is that playing in general in your experience, but in your practice? Are you really leveraging technology to help facilitate all this?
What a great question, especially
today.
That
was a really good question.
That was fantastic. You're brilliant.
I wouldn't go brilliant, but it was a good question. Technology today has changed our lives in such a marvelous way from a learning perspective. Why? Because I can grab my iPhone, and if I have a question around X customer or X situation, if I wait 10 seconds, there begins an answer to a question. I want to put out a learning nugget to somebody. I can push it out through video. I can push it out through audio. I can attach links to it. I can attach PDFs for those people who really want to dive in. Technology, number one, embrace it. It is here to stay. Number two, it gives us so much flexibility to touch the learner so much deeper than we could have years ago.
But are you finding that the learner gets kind of overwhelmed with the information? Because like you're saying, that they have access to tremendous amounts of information, yeah, which is great. But then also they have access to tremendous amounts of information, which can be overwhelming.
That's a great question, because it's like a double-edged sword. I think from a learning leader's perspective, we have a couple of responsibilities. Number one, blend the learning. So offer the learners learning how they learn best. Some people want to read the book. Some people want to just listen to it. Some people want to interact with something. give it to them the way they want to. That's number one. Number two, make it easy for them to access it. Don't make me have to go hunt for the learning. So I've always, I got this bit of advice years ago when I was starting to develop portals for learning. And my mentor, Tom Nolan, who used to be the head of training and development for Anheuser-Busch, said to me, he goes, give it to your 12-year-old child. We have all girls. So he goes, give your daughter an opportunity to look at that portal. If she can figure it out at 10 or 12, your learner is just fine. They're just fine.
That's great advice.
Let a kid play with it. So over the years, as...
So how long has Anheuser-Busch been hiring 10 and 12-year-olds?
Who knew?
Is that their secret? Child labor?
Let's just... I'm going to stop talking right at this point. But it's funny because I've always let our kids, and then I've always encouraged my team members, hey, show it to the kids. Get their feedback. Is it easy? I wouldn't say intuitive, but borderline intuitive. But make it easy for them to access it.
Right. Yeah, that's great advice.
So if learning professionals can get in a place where they can have this kind of substantive conversation with the people in charge, with the folks that can let go of the purse strings and can endorse the activity, the skill development, sounds like there's a great deal that can be accomplished. What counsel, if any, would you offer? I guess maybe one of the best ways to frame it up would be, what would you have learning professionals and organizations start, stop, and keep doing so that they have a chance to have this kind of conversation with the leadership?
Start doing. If you don't have an advisory board, get an advisory board. What is an advisory board? It's a group of leaders, senior leaders. And I always like to look for two distinct groups. Number one, the learning champions. Those are the leaders that just love skill development for their teams, huge champions, always reading, just avid learners. I want the other one too. I want the one who says, yeah, I got a whole stack of binders sitting in my office and I've never used them. I want that one too on the board because they're the ones that are the biggest challenge and they're the ones that you want to hear from. Okay, Sue or Bill, how do we reach you? How do we reach you as a learner? How do we help you help your people move the needle of your business? And then just listen to them. So get an advisory board member or advisory board members and get those two groups. And oh, by the way, get the senior person to nominate the advisory board.
Now, what's the thinking behind that?
Number one, you've got the senior person as your champion. And when the senior person nominates them,
then they got to do it.
Well said. Well said. I've never had an advisory board member that was nominated by the top dog say, I don't have time.
Yeah, I'm too busy.
I'm too busy.
That makes sense.
The other thing that I've always said to the advisory board members is, look, I'm looking for 4 hours every 6 months. 4 hours every 6 months. That's it. We'll meet twice a year for half a day, but that's it. So we're not talking about
right.
A
it's not like an everyday thing.
Yeah,
you know, I think they can carve out a day a year, basically, in order to improve the learning in their organization.
Absolutely. And when you just ask for a half a day, I've often heard that reply. Well, I could give you a day. No, really, just a half a day. It's all I'm asking for.
So what should they stop doing?
Stop doing programs for the sake of programs.
Because they think that's the metric they're being judged by, right?
Well, and to be fair, in some cultures it has been the metric that they've been judged by, am I right?
For years,
right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You can't get rid of me. I do 35 programs a year. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And no. Wait a second. How are you linking? How is your strategy, your learning strategy, linked to the business's strategy? And if it's not, get it. Stop doing what you're doing and get your
get
strategy.
More aligned.
Totally. Get it aligned. Go slow to go fast. Get that strategy aligned.
you work for this author, don't you? This person.
It was one of my mentors over the years who just said, go slow to go fast. And it has paid off huge.
Well, the foundation you have in working with these large brands obviously has served you well and in turn your clients well. But you flew the coop, man. You went out on your own. You're out there. It's a little chillier out there, I suspect. You're doing your own sales and marketing, I suspect.
And he has all these training meetings every 6 months he has to go to.
And all these radio appearances. I don't know where he finds the time. But it still has to be a very competitive arena. How do you even, from a sales and marketing standpoint, how do you even get on the radar of the people that you need to have conversations with so that you can sell them your service? That's going to be a challenge.
It is a challenge, and it's also been a blessing. It's been in the industry, the consumer packaged goods industry. I've been in the learning and development space for 16 years. I've been very blessed to have worked for some major corporations, all Fortune 100, Fortune 200. So I've got a great network of people. So I'm been very, very blessed.
Well, and I suspect one of the greatest places that helps facilitate that is ASTD, am I right?
Yes, the Atlanta chapter of ASTD is the largest, most active, well-run chapter in the nation. And then at ASTD, the American Society for Training and Development in general, is an incredibly supportive, well-connected learning and development organization for us.
Now, you've taken on a leadership role within this ASTD?
I've taken on a support leadership role.
Uh-huh.
I'm helping the sales improvement performance special interest group. I did not want to use two acronyms in one sentence. Could have. And I'm helping them.
Well, I mean, you're the perfect guy for that based on this conversation. No, seriously. I mean, you've got methodology, you've got experience, you've carried the bag.
Yes.
I mean, you're the ideal person to head that up, but it's a time commitment.
It is.
You're not getting a check for that.
Right.
So this is part of that contribution to the profession, but it's also a way for you to get out there and market yourself and be able to have this kind of conversation with people that might write you a check. Yeah.
Yes. One of the things that was told to me when I was in graduate school was one of our professors said, just as we were getting ready to graduate, he said, look, understand something. You are no better than anybody else. What you do have is a responsibility to give back. And that's one of the things that I've always really taken and tried to take to heart is I've got to give back. I have been very blessed, incredibly blessed. The organizations that have invested in me, I now want to be able to give back to others. No, I'm not getting paid for this. Not at all. I do hope somebody can glean something from it and it helps them. Cool. That's what it's all about.
And ASTD has an event coming up later this month, just in a week, 10 days. Tell us a little bit about that and maybe even what we can expect if we have an opportunity to attend and participate.
Yeah, it's called the ACE Conference. I don't have the date right in front of me, but it's in a couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
It's August 20th.
Thank you.
Lee always knows these details.
He does. It's amazing. No paper in front of him.
It's a gift.
He was about to say August the 20th at 7 Concourse Parkway at the Western Atlanta Perimeter North, right here.
Which is walking distance from the studio.
That's a beautiful thing. Elliot Macy will be one of the guest speakers. There's going to be some phenomenal breakouts. It's going to be time well invested. I didn't say time well spent, time well invested.
And so what do you plan to do while you're at the, and what do you hope to accomplish while you're there?
Well, number one, I hope to glean some learning from Elliot. Elliot is a brilliant thinker around learning and technology.
Yeah.
So I always love to learn from Elliot, but I also hope to learn from my colleagues. There's going to be some phenomenal breakouts, two of them that I'm going to attend. I'm going to attend Storytelling and Talking Frogs, and then Move.
Storytelling and Talking Frogs?
Yes, Talking Frogs. So we're going to...
Well, if nothing else, they know how to design a session title that compels you to...
titles.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where's the titling session?
Exactly. That's before that. And then moving to the virtual classroom. I want to see what... I'm interested to see what people are doing and how they're thinking about it. Because if somebody doesn't pull out an iPad or some type of a tablet and a smartphone. So it'll be interesting to see what.
Well, now that's an interesting thing. At one time, I made a living as a keynote speaker, and I still get a chance to address groups from time to time. But a major shift I've had to make is you're up doing your talk, and you feel like it's going well. You've done this talk before. You feel like you're engaging the audience, and you got 30% of them, everybody under 30, and they're banging away at their phone. And you think it's really not like the old guy that read the newspaper that wasn't paying attention to right. you 20 years ago. They really are engaged. That's been different, hasn't it?
It takes a while to get used to that, because I can tell you as an adjunct professor, the students don't print or don't buy books anymore. Their books are on a tablet,
right?
And they're making notes on a laptop in the classroom.
Right.
And early on, I'm like, oh, they're surfing the web. They're pulling up their email.
I think that's a self-esteem issue.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And I'd walk to the back of the classroom, take a look at the screens, and I'm like, oh, they are paying attention. They're looking at the book. Oh, they are taking notes. Oh, all right, never mind. And it probably took a year to get used to that because, you know, when we were all in school.
Because you know what you'd be doing.
Yes, I'd be surfing the web and
playing Angry Birds.
Yes, exactly.
Well, no, it's certainly a brave new world out there. And our learning professionals inside these organizations, it's critical that they approach this whole topic the way that you describe, where they really do have a collegial, almost peer-to-peer conversation with the leaders in this organization, because they're making a very important contribution. They've got to set that foundation properly or nobody wins.
Right. And it's have that conversation in their language, in the leader's yeah. language, not our learning language, but their language. And the other thing that I want to talk about too, just for a split second, is we as learning leaders also have a responsibility to educate our customers. And what do I mean by that? A lot of leaders will have a preconceived notion. We'll just put Skippy or Susie through X, and they'll be fine. Hold it just a second. And just talk about, again, not to be redundant, but to hit this pretty hard, their responsibility. What's their role in this? How are we going to measure it? And then 6 months later, what are we looking for the business impact to be differently? So it's an education, or as I like to say, you're selling learning to leaders.
Right, and you're not ducking the accountability element of it.
No, absolutely not. You're hitting it head on.
Right.
You're hitting it absolutely head on.
And you're insisting that it reside in everywhere, with the leader, with the learning professional, and with the learner.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was just having coffee yesterday morning with a learning leader here in Atlanta, and she was saying they did a post-mortem on a program, and I'll use that term very purposefully, because the leader said to her, my people aren't using this. My people aren't using this.
So it really was mortem.
Yeah, it was. I felt really bad.
But look at all these cool binders we have now.
Yeah, exactly. And boy, we just invested, you know, $250,000 mm-hmm. to put, you know, right. 100 people through mm-hmm. this. And I so wanted to just come across the table and shake her and say, did you get their buy-in early on? Other than we need to put Skippy and Susie through selling skills. Right. Oh, by the way, your role is this. Our role is this. And you, the participant, your role is to apply it. We're not asking you to apply everything starting tomorrow, but what are you going to apply? Just one or two things tomorrow. And then the manager, hold them accountable for it.
Right.
Hold them accountable. So yeah. Everybody,
you know, that accountability thing no one likes.
Well, what's a no. fine idea? You just don't want to get any of it on you.
Right.
But from this day forward, I think I'm going to envision an audience member at a keynote, or a prospect, or a person who's going to go through a class of some kind. I'm going to frame them up as Skippy.
That's it. From now on.
That's my new moniker, my new avatar.
Skippy and Susie have been with me for years.
Well, let's make sure that our listeners know how to reach out and visit with you and have a substantive conversation about these topics. What's the best way for them to connect with you?
Easiest way to get a hold of me is 770-329-8102, or Michael@returnonpeopledevelopment.com. com.
And a website or anything?
No, right now. Right now.
That's just the email is the best way?
Email's
and
the best way.
And ASTD, do you have the ASTD website?
ASTD Atlanta.
ASTDAtlanta.org. And make sure to put on your calendar, Monday, August 20th, 2012, at the Weston Atlanta Perimeter North over here at the Concourse Parkway. We're going to have the ACE conference that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Well, it's been an absolute delight having Thank you on you. The show this morning, man. We'll have to have you come back sometime.
I'd love it. Thank you both very, very much.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and our guest today, Mike Woodard. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio. Thanks.